WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. There were rumors he was very sick, maybe even dead, but North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is alive and well, according to a video from North Korea's state media. Correspondent Paula Hancock says he was seen for the first time in 20 days at the opening of a fertilizer plant.
We are seeing Kim Jong-un walking around at this opening of the fertilizer plant. We're seeing him speaking to officials, laughing and joking with officials, up on stage as well with his sister Kim Yo-jong. There are hundreds, potentially thousands of well-wishers that are there as well.
Speculation about Un started after he missed a birthday celebration for his late grandfather, April 15th. Some people blame China's secrecy on the spread of the coronavirus. Before getting on Marine One to leave the White House for Camp David, President Donald Trump says he clearly has issues with the way China handled the outbreak.
A lot of things are happening with respect to China. We're not happy, obviously, with what happened. This is a bad situation all over the world, 182 countries. But we'll be having a lot to say about that.
Thursday, President Trump said he was considering imposing more tariffs on China in response to its handling of the virus. A lot of people have been doing what they can to help frontline hospital workers, including bringing them food and making them masks. Today, the Navy and Air Force will be showing their appreciation with an air show.
The Air Force Thunderbirds and the U.S. Navy Blue Angels are going to be flying 12 of their aircraft in very close proximity to each other. We call it a Delta formation. And we'll be flying at about 1,000 feet over the D.C. area.
Major Trevor Aldridge says the flyover starts around 11:45 and lasts about 20 minutes. Last month, hundreds of people drove past the State House in Maryland, honking their horns and calling for Governor Larry Hogan to lift the stay-at-home order.
They weren't quite as mad yet as a lot of them are right now.
One of the organizers of Reopen Maryland, Jim Wass, says this morning at 10, they'll start their drive from Frederick to Salisbury.
My group largely wants more ability for the individual business to responsibly open.
Which he says can be done safely with precautions in place, including requiring people to wear face masks and gloves. Some places around the country are starting to reopen. Yesterday, more than a dozen U.S. states, including Texas and South Carolina, allowed restaurants, stores, and other businesses to reopen. The stay-at-home order in Virginia ends next Friday. Governor Ralph Northam says he'll announce more details of his reopening plan Monday. The Montgomery County Council this week okayed nearly $6 million in coronavirus relief funding, with $750,000 of it going to the County Food Council.
There is deep need out here in our community.
Montgomery County Council member Will Juwando says a partnership of churches and food banks are giving away free groceries again this morning.
We're going to be at the East County Regional Services Center in Briggs Cheney if folks need food at 11 a.m.
But the food boxes go quickly.
And within an hour each time, they're gone. And there's still people that need them.
Juwando expects the council to pass more relief measures in the coming weeks. Barbara Britt, WMAL and WMAL.com.
Traffic and weather next.
It's everything you need to know Sundays on WMAL. Starting at 5 a.m., it's VA Sunday Magazine. At 5:30, hear the Chris McKay Show. At 7, it's Heroes Talk Radio with Dave Ahrens. At 8, it's the Eric Stewart Show pointing you home. Hear The Wise Investor at 9. Dr. Tom Rosell Live at 11. Purity Products at 2. Mortgage Radio at 3. Real Estate Today at 7. And at 9 p.m., it's Lawyer in Your Corner with Ryan Wilson on 105.9 FM WMAL.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Hey everyone, it's Laura from Garden Answer. Your backyard is your sanctuary, and spending time outdoors is more important than ever. So make it count by planting proven winners flowering shrubs. Hydrangeas, roses, lilacs, and evergreens to help you plant a beautiful outdoor oasis you'll enjoy for years to come. Your local garden center is ready to help with a great selection and curbside pickup or delivery. Just ask for the plants in the white containers. Make your garden the best it can be with Proven Winners Flowering Shrubs.
WMAL traffic from the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Virginia on 395, the express lanes closed for weekend road work between Duke Street and the 14th Street Bridge, and also the exit ramp up from northbound 395 to go on to westbound Duke Street is closed in conjunction with the paving work taking place on the westbound Duke Street Bridge over 395. Also keep in mind in the district, Howard Road is closed in both directions between the Anacostia Freeway and the Suitland Parkway for weekend road work, and Howard Road will also be closed between the Metro Parking Access Drive and South Capitol Street. Detours are posted. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Expect partly cloudy skies, very nice conditions for your Saturday, highs in the low to mid-70s. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy, some showers possible by dawn, lows 55 to 60. Morning showers on your Sunday, not the nicest day. Afternoon and evening storms possible, highs in the mid to upper 70s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Now, the Saturday morning update.
105.9 FM, WMAL. You are listening to the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Each week we are joined by John Gizzi. He is the White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Good morning, John.
Good morning. What a nice morning it is.
A lot of questions about what will President Trump do about China? Will there be financial retribution? Will we seek reimbursements for some of the costs of the coronavirus? But one thing you wrote about this week that I thought was interesting, and that is the whole question of President Trump and whether he will thwart investment of U.S. pension funds in China. And first off, explain that process of U.S. pension funds invested in China.
Well, this is something that's very obscure and arcane, but when one knows all the details about it, it's powerful. A five-member board oversees what is essentially the 401k for government military retirees. You're talking about more than $7 billion here, folks. And in May of 2017, this board voted to expand the international index for investing the money for retirement for civilian and military employees in the United States. What does that mean? It means that now that money can be invested in the Chinese index and the Chinese market. And U.S. dollars that's meant to help the retirement years of those who serve their country can now go to help prop up and mobilize state-run industries that create tanks, airplanes, and new weapons for the People's Liberation Army and surveillance equipment to put down within the Chinese country. In short, the very people who have worked to keep America free are now having their twilight years funded in part by businesses that make China hardly free. It's that simple. Now, it's taken 3 years, and this is finally about to happen. This has come to the attention of several members of Congress. Last year, one Congressman, Mark Meadows of North Carolina, offered legislation in the House to stop the putting of U.S. retirement dollars into Chinese state-run companies. Nothing ever came of it. Mark Meadows is now White House Chief of Staff, and this issue, within the last 10 days, since it was reported by Newsmax, has come to the attention of the President of the United States. Sources in the White House say that Mark Meadows, now White House Chief of Staff, still feels strongly about the issue, that he has a firm hand on the staff in the West Wing, as well as the attention of the President. And Mr. Trump, while sounding out his staff on how to stop this investment, is very likely next week to do it with the stroke of a pen. That is an executive order. We'll certainly be watching this.
I would call it one of your pet peeves, but this has been probably your major peeve over the last, 5 or 6 months now. that there had not been regular press briefings by a press secretary at the White House. There is a new press secretary, and on Friday, her first briefing. Tell us about Kayleigh McEnany.
Well, Kayleigh McEnany, based on her performance, was a star. I would say that she did so well that day, she could probably get a starring role in The Crown at this point. But the fact is that you never judge a press secretary, and I've had to learn this after covering more than 10 of them at the White House. You never judge the president's top spokesman or spokeswoman by his or her first day on the job. As it turned out, she made strong statements, she took a few questions, and she rivaled Donald Trump himself in introducing special guests to the very diminished crowd of reporters there. In case people are not watching, one is down to 14 seats within the press room. People sit apart from one another. The cable TV seat, which Newsmax shared with others, is on a rotating basis. That said, Kayleigh showed that she can give and take in these circumstances and do it well. But the big question is not Kayleigh's performance, not how well reporters did because there were such few questions, but rather, is this a cameo appearance or a starring role? Will there be the resumption of regular press briefings, as the White House Correspondents Association has long insisted? We'll find out soon enough.
Let's turn to presidential politics. Joe Biden, pretty much for the past month, has basically dodged the entire issue of Tara Reid's allegations of sexual assault. However, Joe Biden was on MSNBC on Friday morning, and this doesn't seem to be going away for the vice president.
No, it's not going away for the vice president. Look, in an incident that is well over 10 years old, a former employee of the staff of then-Senator Biden of Delaware charged that he dealt with her in an inappropriate way, made inappropriate motions around her, including touching. This is something she's been talking about for weeks now, and the press has just started to bring up. For the most part, the former vice president's defenders in the Fourth Estate have dismissed the claims of Ms. Reid. It should be pointed out that were Joe Biden still a senator, the Senate Ethics Committee could have her come and testify under oath and could recommend action against him. But the rules of the Ethics Committee hold that once a senator is no longer in office, there's no way that he or she could be pursued, questioned, or sanctioned. As it turns out, she's found a much more sympathetic audience in the national media. Some listen to her, some do not. But it's clear, as you say, the Tara Reid business is not going away. My guess is former Vice President Biden will have to do some splaining now, and whoever his running mate will be, and he has said he will put a woman on the ticket, she's going to have some explaining herself to do on this issue.
Another note in presidential politics that a lot of people may have missed this week because it was easy to miss, there is another presidential candidate in the race?
In case you missed this, folks, and I'm very surprised if you did, the Libertarian Party is now likely to nominate Michigan's five-term Congressman Justin Amash for president. Earlier this week, Congressman Amash, 40 years old, a Republican who became a Democrat and the lone Republican in the House to vote for Donald Trump's impeachment, he formally became a Libertarian and said he would seek that party's nomination for president at its convention in Austin, Texas, in June. Now, it should be noted, and Justin Amash is someone who has had problems with his own party, has had to stave off primary opponents several times, and in all likelihood was going to face a stiff challenge for renomination. He chose the better part of valor and left. Libertarians historically get 1% of the vote nationwide. I spoke yesterday morning to former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson, the Libertarian nominee in 2016 and 2012. He got about 3.5 million votes. Will the party do better in 2020? Governor Johnson thinks so. It's a foregone conclusion they'll nominate Congressman Amash. He's an office holder who has some degree of name recognition. And if it's a close election, Amash is worth watching.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Follow him on Twitter at John Gizzi. Thank you, sir. Have a good weekend.
Looking forward to a nice long weekend and to the day when America is fully free again.
Don't we all? 7:15, Saturday morning updates, WMAL. Time for check of the traffic and weather. Then we're back with Cheryl Atkinson and a look at the real estate market with Eric Stewart. Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
A couple of work zones on the Beltway in Maryland. On the outer loop at Colesville Road, there is some road work in the right lane. And on the inner loop approaching the spur, there is road work in the right lane. So far, no delays through those work zones. Watch out for some construction on 355 northbound between Waverly Street and Montgomery Avenue in the right lane. And also there is a work zone on Georgia Avenue northbound between Norbeck Road and the Intercounty Connector in the right shoulder and the right lane. That is not causing any delay through the work zone. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Expect partly cloudy skies, very nice conditions for your Saturday, highs in the low to mid-70s. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy, some showers possible by dawn, lows 55 to 60. Morning showers on your Sunday, not the nicest day. Afternoon and evening storms possible, highs in the mid to upper 70s. I'm the ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's 50 degrees in the nation's capital, 716.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
Thank you for joining us on the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. We're joined by Cheryl Atkinson each week, and she has authored Stonewall, The Smear, and her new book, Slanted, How the News Media Taught Us to Love Censorship and Hate Journalism, comes out in November, but you can pre-order it now. She also hosts Full Measure. That's every Sunday morning, 10 o'clock on ABC 7. Hi, Cheryl. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Wanted to get into a story that you have on Full Measure tomorrow because so much attention has been focused on the oil industry, the state of Texas, the economic impact of coronavirus, now the reopening. And what are you finding now with the impact of the coronavirus and what's next?
Well, I was fascinated that I hadn't heard a whole lot about it, but that in 2018 we became the world's number one producer of crude oil. And this was a huge thing for the United States and particularly for Texas, you know, one of the epicenters for our oil production. But, of course, with coronavirus and some other world events, that's all just flipped upside down. And we checked back in to see really what's happening. We talked to the land commissioner, George P. Bush, yes, related to the Bushes. But he handles this sort of thing. He sort of oversees the oil and gas issues. So we'll hear from him on Full Measure, but not just about how it impacts Texas, but you know, this is the engine, this industry, that drives a lot of our economy. So I'm asking him how we're going to pull out of it, you know, and how fast he thinks we'll be able to do that for everybody's good.
While we have seen such wonderfully low gas prices, that can't be helpful to those in the oil industry in this country.
Well, and to us, because penny wise, pound foolish. It's like we're saving some money on the front end, but if it's costing our economy and our jobs and the tax revenue and the other things that benefit us, it's really not the savings it may seem like it is. There's a balance that I've learned that we have to keep the oil industry healthy for the sake of our economy and also keep gas prices reasonable but not so low that it's not even worth them to drill it out of the ground. And that's where we reached, where nobody needs the oil, so it costs more for them to pull it up and store it than to just, you know, leave it in the ground and not let anybody work. So they're going to have to figure this out, and believe me, they're trying quickly, and they seem to think that we'll be able to pull out fast once the economy gets moving again. I don't know that we're going to go back to where we were very fast. We were at the pinnacle, but they have a lot of hope that we'll be able to bounce back.
You know, the media has certainly paid a lot of attention to whistleblowers over the past couple of years, and the whistleblower has now been elevated to the highest of pedestals in the media and among Democratic voices. But I guess it depends on who you're blowing the whistle on.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it depends on where you stand as to whether the media pays much attention to you. And I'm visiting really one of my favorite whistleblower stories of all time. There's a guy named Brad Birkenfeld, who was a Swiss banker in 2007, who blew the whistle on thousands and thousands of millionaires and billionaires here in the United States, hiding their money in offshore accounts, which is illegal. But when he came to the Justice Department to talk about it, they treated him like a criminal and ultimately imprisoned him for his role instead of treating him like a whistleblower, and largely let off UBS and the tax evaders fairly scot-free. And the twist of the story is, while in prison, he applied for a whistleblower award from the IRS, which was able to collect some of the money from these names, even though they were kept secret and allowed to kind of go on with their business, these tax evaders, but they were able to collect some money. He got a slice of that under whistleblower law, $104 million. Why am I interviewing him again this week on Full Measure? Well, he's back on the scene. He's got nothing but time and money, and he wants to go after what he thinks is the corruption in the Justice Department from the 2007 characters who prosecuted him, the whistleblower, and treated him like the criminal instead of like someone that came to help.
That story, on the heels of what we've seen in the revelations of how General Flynn has been handled and some of the handwritten notes of Peter Strzok and some of the other details that have been released in the documents, and it really, really is of deep concern as to what's going on. These agencies that have so many professionals working in the field, but, you know, a couple people at the top can tarnish the whole agency.
Leah, you can choose to believe that this was an anomaly, the way things were handled in 2016 with Flynn and the improper spying on Carter Page and the Trump campaign, or it's entirely possible that stuff like that has happened to a lot of people, many of them less famous or infamous that we haven't heard about, that have no way to really get recourse. And I think it's closer to the latter, that there have probably been a lot of victims of these corrupt agents that didn't just become corrupt one time for one purpose, but had made this a way that they do their business over time. And, you know, I think there's a lot more fallout than we know about in the records and past of some of these crooked people.
Cheryl Atkinson, Full Measure tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock, ABC 7, and then throughout the day on News Channel 8. Cheryl, thank you very much.
Thank you.
722, Saturday Morning Update, WMAL.
Even though COVID-19 poses an unprecedented challenge, you can count on Novec to deliver reliable power and to help in other ways. Novec.com offers tips to save energy while spending more time at home. Novec customers can monitor their energy use online, as well as pay bills through the website or by phone. And anyone can donate to help neighbors in need through Operation Roundup. Novec, power you can count on.
It's the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler, and thank you for joining us this morning. And we've got a special treat for you. You generally hear Eric Stewart on Sunday mornings, but with the impact of the COVID-19 virus on the entire area and all aspects of our lives, one big question is, what does it mean for real estate if you're buying or if you're selling? Now, as you know, Eric Stewart hosts Pointing You Home. It's Sunday mornings at 8, and he is with the Eric Stewart Group of Long and Foster. He's been doing real estate transactions here in the Washington area for over 30 years. I think it's 33 now. And they cover Maryland, D.C., and Virginia. And Eric, good to talk to you this morning.
Hey, Rick. Great to be back. It's been a few years since I've been a part of the show. So nice of you to invite me. Thank you.
My pleasure. The impact of COVID-19. I mean, I would assume the real estate market was chugging along just like the economy was chugging along, and all of a sudden, everything comes to a halt.
Absolutely so. In fact, the pending home sales in the D.C. metro area were down 15.9% in the month of March, and that was especially due to the last 10 days of the month of March. However, we also saw inventory only up 23% this year instead of 44%, meaning that normally we'd see a much bigger climb in inventory in the month of March than we saw this year. So We had lower pending sales, but we also had lower supply. So we went into April actually feeling pretty good about the market. Month of April, very different feeling across the breadth of the market. The number of buyers coming through our listings is about 75% less than it was last year at the same time for the month of April. And I think primarily because the buyers who really have to move are still out looking. We as a group, thankfully, have sold 18 homes through our group, which is a good month for us. And we're really happy about having gotten those houses under contract. There are many real estate agents right now who are suffering with almost no sales. So we thank the Lord for that. I think that the fact is, though, that the buyers who've been looking to buy either our listings or we've been representing, those buyers really have to make a move, and those sellers really have to make a move, which is why our service is considered essential, because we have to be able to liquidate estates and otherwise. And fortunately, in this environment, through our protocols that we've created, we've been able to do so and keep everybody protected at the same time.
So we've seen what's happened with supply and demand in so many sectors of the economy. Eric, right now, is it a buyer's market, a seller's market, or is it a draw?
Rick, it's a draw right now because the inventory is still very tight and the buyer demand is not quite as strong. We're not seeing prices fall. We're not seeing prices jump. We're seeing things flat at the moment. So if you're a home seller and you want to put your house on the market right now, you're going to sell. If you're a home buyer and you're looking for a home, you have a little bit less competition. Good for both sides.
So if you're buying, what is the impact of COVID-19 on the mortgage industry right now?
Well, the 10-year treasury dropped like a rock in March. In fact, the 10-year treasury note is what the 30-year fixed rate is based upon. And we saw the 10-year treasury below 1% for the first time in my lifetime, which implied a lending rate, fixed lending rate of between 2.75% and 3.5%, depending upon the kind of product. So those fixed rates hit an all-time low in the last 4 to 5 weeks. You know, we are in a recession. It's not just a contraction. We have 26 million people who are out of work as of the beginning of this past week, and it's obviously gotten worse since then. That's nationally. So there's definitely a national breadth of importance to what happens with the cost of money. And with the cost of money dropping, it makes it more affordable for buyers to buy. And therefore, the market has remained somewhat robust. People are purchasing, and inventory has stayed relatively low.
Okay, so conditions are good for buying. How do you, as a real estate agent, handle showing homes?
That's a great question. Rick, I want to give a quick plug, if you don't mind. We are going to do a webinar this week, Thursday the 7th, and actually again on the 14th, if you can't make this Thursday. On the 7th or 14th at 2 p.m., you can join my webinar on how to buy or sell real estate in the COVID-19 pandemic. This is a half an hour webinar. It is just a fire hose of great intelligence on how to approach the preparation process, the showing process, as well as the closing process in light of all of the new protocols that have been introduced by the state and by the federal government. As a buyer agent, I'm going out specifically. I'm wearing a mask, gloves, and so on. And as a seller's agent, I'm providing those at my listings, as well as some kind of a dispense of some kind of hand sanitizer. So those are the basics of how to do it. But when you've got home sellers who are trying to prepare their house for sale and they've got a ton of stuff to donate, but nobody's taking any donations right now, and contractors, many contractors are not working right now because they don't want to expose themselves, you have to figure out ways around those processes, and we've created those. So join me. Go to ericstewartgroup.com if you're interested. That'll be this Thursday or the following Thursday at 2 p.m., and you can sign up at ericstewartgroup.com on the homepage.
What do you see as the long-term change in the real estate transaction process?
Well, that's a great question. I think our country has shifted its thinking about the use of online for a lot of our day-to-day. I've been taking workout classes, like core exercise classes. I've been talking with family, with friends. I'm doing transactions, presenting listing appointments, going over contracts with clients using Zoom and other tools. So I think the impact is going to facilitate the means with which we do business in many respects. Do you remember when the fax machine was invented? All of a sudden, a client could send you something by fax. You wouldn't have to drive over and pick it up. Now, you don't have to go over to the office. You can sit at your house and handle the business remotely, and people will now accept that as legitimate because of what we've been going through. So I think it'll streamline things. I think it'll make it easier to do the business. But, you know, Rick, like anything, there's nothing like that personal touch of just talking to somebody face-to-face. So I think we'll all want to keep that a part of the process.
And you mentioned getting ready for the sale, and I know over the years you've offered the Market Ready Guide, and I think that's really helpful for people who are preparing to sell, and you can still get that at ericstewartgroup.com, I believe.
Yes, you can. We offer that. It's a great guide on how to prepare, including what improvements to make to get top dollar, how to interview a realtor before you hire one, things like this, and it's... it's really consumer oriented. The Eric Stewart Show here at WMAL for the last 16 years is all about trying to help the consumer better understand how to approach the market. And that guide is especially helpful. And it's free. Download it for free at ericstewartgroup.com.
And also check out the webinar. It's this coming Thursday, May 7th. Also the following Thursday, May the 14th. Get all the information at ericstewartgroup.com. Eric, thank you very much. Really appreciate the information. I think it's helpful to a lot of people.
Rick, my pleasure as always. Have a wonderful day and hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you, Eric. News is next, and then we're back with Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland. Stay with us.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station. News now.
News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. More than a dozen states are starting to let businesses reopen, but that's not happening here yet. Some say it's too soon to reopen as the number of cases in our region continues to climb. Yesterday, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia reported the biggest jump in new infections in one day since the pandemic started. That's attributed in part to more testing. Reopen Maryland protesters will be out again today, imploring Governor Larry Hogan to reopen the state. One of the organizers, Jim Wass, believes commerce creates the wealth that pays for health care.
When government crushes commerce, government crushes that source of wealth, and we'll crush health care.
Reopen Maryland protesters will drive from Frederick to Salisbury starting at 10 this morning. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam says he'll talk more about his reopening plans Monday, days before the state's stay-at-home order is scheduled to end. If you live in certain parts of the D.C. metro area today, look up around 11:45. The Blue Angels and Thunderbirds will fly over some local hospitals to thank frontline workers. Thunderbirds pilot Major Trevor Aldridge.
We'd rather thank them face-to-face for all the work and effort that they've put in. But since we can't do that, we would like to show them our support from a, you know, socially distanced space, which is, you know, in the air.
The flyover starts around 11:45 and lasts about 20 minutes. Governor Hogan declared today Healthcare Heroes Day in Maryland. Traffic and weather next on WMAL.
The numbers.
A lot of very big numbers and a lot of very small numbers.
Expect them to change.
The number of COVID-19 cases.
The numbers will go up.
The numbers show you can get it.
And expect us to provide the information you need.
Testing sites.
People trying to meet their bills.
When we're going to reopen as a school district.
Stay connected, because around here,
there's a lot of numbers
in the weeks and months ahead.
You're more than just a number.
Together to protect our community.
To be there for you.
This is 105.9 FM WMAL.
Are you paying too much for term life insurance? There's a tremendous price war among the major term life companies. Rates have dropped dramatically in the past few years. For example, a man age 45 non-tobacco user, $1 million of coverage, $75 per month level rate for the next 10 years. Or a man age 50 non-tobacco can obtain $500,000 of coverage for a monthly premium of only $110 per month, guaranteed not to change for the next 20 years. That's right, level rate guaranteed not to change for the next 20 years. If you're a smoker, we have great rates available for you as well. At Termbusters, we specialize in policies of $500,000 and above. If you're looking for new or replacement term life insurance, call today for a quote at 1-800-569-5440. That's 1-800-569-5440. You're probably paying more than you should. Call Termbusters, 1-800-569-5440, or visit our website at termbusters.net. Remember, 1-800-569-5440. Rates and availability may vary by state. Sample rate quotes based on preferred non-tobacco underwriting. Exam required to qualify.
WMAL traffic from the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
On 66 in Arlington eastbound between Washington Boulevard and Sycamore Street, you will find construction there. Only one lane to the left is getting through that work zone, but so far that is not causing much of a delay. Also in Virginia, keep in mind that the ramp from northbound 395 to westbound Duke Street is closed in conjunction with the paving work taking place on westbound Duke Street, and that is closed between Van Dorn Street and 395, and that should be in effect until about 6 o'clock on Sunday evening. So far, no delays traveling on 95 from Dale City heading in towards Springfield. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy and warm on this Saturday. High temperatures into the low and mid-70s. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy. A few showers possible by early tomorrow morning. Lows 55 to 60. We'll have the morning showers on your Sunday, followed by afternoon and evening storm chances. Highs in the mid to upper 70s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the StormWatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Hey, it's Larry O'Connor. You heard me talk about how EMP 180 helped me become a healthier person. Now comes new info from the CDC about how obesity actually puts people at risk for the disease that everyone's talking about. But here's the great news. You can now join people all over our area and take advantage of EMP 180's remote program. People like Dion, all the way in California, but Dion, you are taking advantage of EMP 180 via remote. Tell me how that works.
It's actually, Larry, been working fantastic. Over the span of 12 weeks, lost 21 pounds, felt great. The fact that the food is directly shipped right to my doorstep really sets my mind at ease. I can't tell you how great it felt just to lose that weight and to really to feel lighter and healthier. I slept better, breathing was easier, getting around was fantastic. I can't recommend it enough.
Don't let COVID-19 be another excuse that keeps you from losing that weight and getting fit. Try EMP Remote for yourself. Don't wait. Do it now. Go to EMP180.com. That's EMP180.com.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, wherever the mission takes us, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for our nation, for us all. The few, the proud, the Marines.
This is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research. Tony, good morning. It's good to talk to you.
Hey, good to be on with you, Rick. And full disclosure to your audience, according to a tweet by Alyssa Milano last night, I am a terrible person. Just for your audience to understand that I've been branded, so just they understand who they're talking to. So.
Now, wait a minute. You're in the crosshairs of Alyssa Milano?
Yes, I am. So just say it. You know, I am the worst of the worst. I'm quoting directly here. So just be aware of this as something that your audience needs to be aware of.
So. All right. So my obvious question is, why are you the worst of the worst?
Well, not to get too far off topic, I tweeted in defense of individuals across the country who have been exercising safely, I might add. It's been not a single incident of violence. Their First and Second Amendment rights. And apparently, because I have publicly stated my support for this, according to her, and this is, you guys can go to check out my tweet or Twitter feed, I am the worst of the worst. Just saying it. So, you know, who doesn't become terrible by supporting constitutional rights? You know, that's, I guess, where we're at.
Well, I'll have to get that tweet and remember to use that in your intro next week.
Yes.
Let's get to the business at hand. And I guess we could call it monkey business when it comes to the General Flynn investigation. Some of the revelations this week, just kind of summarize what we learned in how that investigation was handled. And the whole question mark about setting him up, you know, there was some kind of a discussion. Just walk us through that.
So the revelation this week was a set of handwritten notes, which are from Bill Presap. Presap was the chief of counterintelligence, which is significant to this new information. These notes were based on guidance that, according to the record, James Comey was giving to the team to include Peter Strzok and the team about to go over to the White House in January of 2017 to interview Mike Flynn. And notably, it's been on the internet. James Comey even says in an interview, he broke all the rules to send these agents over. Now, what's most important here for everybody to understand is that in the note itself, it specifically says as objectives for the meeting is to have Mike Flynn lie. The specific word is used, either tell the truth or lie, and then to get him either fired or essentially prosecuted, indicted. So, you know, I'm speaking as a former counterintelligence special agent who's done these sorts of things. Rick, you never give guidance or execute guidance for you're specifically trying to seek an outcome of a specific interview, let alone punishment based on what you do in the interview. And that's what's most significant about this, is that any special agent is supposed to essentially do a fact-finding to establish specific objectives relating to what you want to know, not to achieve a specific outcome. So this is what's most significant. And the second factor in this is that this is counterintelligence. This is even criminal. So another piece of evidence that the FBI completely abandoned the way they're supposed to protect U.S. citizens' rights and use counterintelligence to discover threats, foreign counterintelligence threats to the United States. This was a use of intelligence assets to intercede in a political issue. So those two things alone need to frighten every American, no matter what party you're in, because this is direct evidence, and I think we're going to see more, of the FBI deciding at the very top with James Comey that they were going to do some, they were going to try to remove someone based on political motivations rather than on any derogatory or criminal information.
What was the rub between Flynn and President Obama or the Obama administration? Because that's part of what's going on here, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that Flynn was this twofold. Flynn was the most direct access point to get right at Trump immediately. And that's significant because Mike Flynn was also hated, and I know this from talking to some of the people involved, was hated by Comey and by Brennan, that they felt that when he disclosed information about ISIS to Congress, he was no longer a reliable team player. This was back in 2015, as I recall. So that's why he was asked to leave. So in essence, Rick, Flynn was a burr under the saddle of Obama. And the only name apparently brought up to President Trump right after the 2016 election during the first meeting between Trump and Obama was Flynn. Basically, Obama said, you need to get rid of Mike Flynn. I would argue that because Mike Flynn, the moment he hit the ground as the National Security Council director in January, would have instantly seen what we now see to be the Russian collusion narrative. Remember, Rick, all of the Russian collusion stuff started well in advance of January 2017. And I know from direct conversations that Flynn had planned to conduct a full 100% review of every clandestine operation and every major FBI foreign counterintelligence operation. And by making that decree, and apparently this decree was made in a meeting between senior intelligence and law enforcement officials with Vice President Pence in a room in December of 2016, that announcement, I think, indicated they had to do something rapidly to get rid of Flynn. And that's why you saw the FBI agents act as you did in the notes that were revealed over this past week.
I want to turn to an article that you have written, and you can find it at lifezet.com. Headline on it, Liberal Media Smears Keep Coming, President Trump Keeps Honoring His Oath. Interesting contrast there.
Yeah, and I start off with the very place we're talking right now, the Russian collusion narrative. So as we recall, Rick, the individuals in law enforcement and the media, and I would argue they were working very closely together because we still don't know where all the leaks came from, were hammering President Trump and the administration all through 2017 into 2018 over this narrative. And think about what happened. The president, while he did respond, never wavered from trying to do the things he had to do to run the country. And it is quite amazing. And my point to this article, and if you see the contrast that I put in there regarding what is reported versus what the reality is, we're seeing the same thing again now. Right now, as we go through the response to the coronavirus and the government's work with the private sector to keep everybody protected, there is this new coronavirus failure narrative which is being formed. And we see it every day. We see it in the disrespect of the reporters when they ask questions at the White House. You see it in the way the any event that is reported on in the most intensely negative way possible. And it's a pattern. And I think that the American – I'd like to believe the American people now see what's going on, because it's necessary for them to see that the media is not reporting. They're simply putting information out that they are aspiring to report based on their own political bias, and it's a very dangerous thing.
All right. So North Korean state media releasing video of Kim Jong-un apparently at a fertilizer factory. I'm not sure if I've been on vacation and out of sight for a couple of weeks, I'd want to make my first appearance at a fertilizer factory. However, that's what they say. What do we know about it?
Well, we know that apparently he's, not dead. That's the biggest headline to take away. it's like the old Chevy Chase thing, reporting on someone, Franco was still dead. Well, in this case, Un is still alive. And I think that's what we have to understand. We don't know exactly what happened. There's one of the things I think is credible over the last few weeks is that he may have been ill. There may have been reasons for his disappearance from public sight. But I tend to believe, based on this reporting and some other things which have come out of South Korea, and let's face it, the South Koreans have pretty good intelligence on the North. I tend to believe that Un is still alive, and he will remain in charge of North Korea, which isn't necessarily a good or bad thing. It is just a political reality we have to face as we move forward. So,
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, thank you so much. Again, his article is at lifezet.com. Liberal media smears keep coming. President Trump keeps honoring his oath. Tony, thank you.
Always great to be on with you, Rick. Thanks.
You bet. 7:47, Saturday Morning Update, WMAL. We'll talk to KT McFarland next. First off, we're headed over to the traffic center as Michelle Murray is there, and then we'll check the weather.
In Maryland on 270 northbound between West Diamond Avenue, Maryland 117, and Middlebrook Road, look for some road work there along the right side of the roadway. Also on the inner loop of the Beltway approaching the 270 spur, work zone there in the right lane, and on the outer loop at Colesville Road, you'll also find some right lane construction. So far, no delays through those work zones. Now keep in mind that White's Ferry is closed right now due to flooding conditions on the Potomac River. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Expect partly cloudy skies, very nice conditions for your Saturday, highs in the low to mid-70s. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy, some showers possible by dawn, lows 55 to 60. Morning showers on your Sunday, not the nicest day. Afternoon and evening storms possible, highs in the mid to upper 70s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
In the nation's capital, 50 degrees, 7:48 on the Saturday Morning Update.
Stuck at home? Depend on WMAL for information and your friends as we get through the corona crisis together.
Because that's what matters.
Listen on your smart speaker, home computer, or the WMAL app.
I love your show.
105.9 FM WMAL.
Hey guys, Laura from Garden Answer here. Your backyard is your sanctuary, and spending time outdoors is more important than ever. So make your garden the best it can be with proven winter's flowering shrubs. Ask your local garden center about safe, convenient curbside pickup or delivery.
You're so annoying.
You're so annoying.
Stop copying me. Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop talking me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes, twice a day. I have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
It is the Saturday Morning Update. We're at 7:49. We are joined by KT McFarland. She is the former Deputy National Security Advisor in the Trump administration, and she has authored Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, we talked to you early on this year about your experience in questioning from the FBI, because we've seen the story this week about, of course, General Flynn, how that was handled. We talked about that a few minutes ago with Tony Schaefer. You went through a similar experience. You talk about it in your new book, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. And you've also authored an opinion piece at Fox News, which I think came out last night. And on that, the headline, Michael Flynn didn't commit a crime. He was set up by deep state to cripple Trump presidency. Walk us through the article and walk us through your experience.
Yeah, it's clear now. And I must say up front that I've not been able to talk to General Flynn since he left the White House in 2017 on the advice of his lawyers and my lawyers. So I started from there, and I didn't know exactly what his experiences were. I only knew what mine were. But now press reports are confirming that what he experienced was what I experienced, but probably much worse. Because they have several things that they wanted from us. One, they wanted me and they wanted Flynn to turn on Trump. So they wanted me to say things that confirmed things that they were proposing that Flynn had done, crimes Flynn had committed, crimes Trump had committed, and I wouldn't do it because they didn't do it. And then they tried to trick me with gotcha questions of they had seized all of my records and files and phone logs and text messages and emails, which they had in a big 5-inch wide binder notebook. And they were flipping through to ask about, well, what about this phone call? And I would say, well, I didn't remember. I have nothing in front of me except my memory. And they would say, well, what about this phone call or what about that person? And if you make one tiny little mistake, like you think, well, I think that meeting was Tuesday night, but it turns out it was Wednesday night, or the phone call was Tuesday afternoon and you thought it was Tuesday night, they can then jump on that, as absurd as it sounds, they can jump on that and say, aha, you should have remembered, you're therefore lying to us, that's perjury. And that's what they did to Flynn, that's what they did to me, because they wanted to find, they knew who they wanted to find guilty, and then they went around to figure out how to find him guilty, and that's borne out by the notes that have been released this week of what the agents were doing when they went to see Flynn. Similarly, they said, well, you suggested, we don't really need a lawyer because you're really just giving us fact information and, you know, you're helping us to try to figure out what the Russians did. Well, stupid me, I'm such a Girl Scout. I thought, well, yeah, the FBI, they're our friends. They're going to protect us. I want to find out what the Russians did more than anybody because I want to make sure they don't do it again. But that was never the purpose of it. The purpose of it was to trick people like me and Flynn so that we would turn on Trump. Now, in Flynn's case, it was more complicated because they had other objectives with him. Flynn had made it pretty clear, and we had already talked about it during the transition, that he wanted to, that Trump wanted to do a wholesale reorganization of the intelligence community. It had gotten to the point that there's 16 sprawling agencies, sometimes doing the same work redundantly, many times not being very accurate in their conclusions. And so Flynn wanted to oversee a reorganization of at least the CIA, but the intelligence community, similar to what he had done when he was head of the Defense Intelligence Agency in the Obama administration. Well, the intelligence agencies, they don't want that to happen, right? They think things are just fine the way they are. With them in charge, they don't want somebody coming in on top of them and reorganizing them. So it was a preemptive strike against Flynn. I think that was why in the notes that were released this week, that was, you know, what is our objective to get him fired? Of course they wanted him fired because they knew if he had been fired, then this wholesale reorganization of the intelligence community probably would not have gone forward or would not have gone forward as quickly as it was hoped that we would do it. So they had a second thing. And then Flynn also had vulnerabilities that people like me didn't have. I mean, Flynn, they threatened to charge Flynn's son with a crime. They'd figure out what the crime was later. And so Flynn really sacrificed himself. He pled guilty to crimes he didn't commit in order to save his son from being prosecuted, bottom line. And the FBI knew that, and they knew they could use that against him. So they blackmail people, they intimidate them, they seize your files, they play gotcha questions. Some point, they're going to find a crime, and then they're going to charge you for it. And I think that's exactly what happened to Flynn. And, you know, here's the thing, Rick. At the time, when General Flynn made his statement when he pled guilty, it was an odd statement. And go back and look at it again. He said, I plead guilty to this, that, and the other thing. But he didn't say in his personal statement that he issued along with his statement for the offense. In his personal statement, he said, I did this for the sake of what, in the best interest of my family. In other words, he was telegraphing to everybody why he was forced to plead the way he did.
Okay, I want to go to this point. You and I talked about this in February. It's in your book, and you alluded to it a minute ago. And that's how, when you were interviewed, two FBI agents showed up unannounced, and they started asking you questions, and you asked whether you should have a lawyer, and they said...
I said, do I need a lawyer? Are you investigating me for something? I never even met any Russians. I wasn't even on the campaign. And quote, the senior agent said, we can't tell you not to get a lawyer. But we're here just to ask you some questions, to get a background, to get a sense of what happened. You're what's called a fact witness. And I asked them this at the beginning, the middle, at the end of every interview I had. Am I a suspect of something? Are you looking at me as a target of your investigation? Am I under some suspicion? And every single time, with my husband present and other witnesses, they said, no. You're just a fact witness. And they kept insisting that until the point where they handed me a subpoena and they said, well, your status has now changed.
Hmm. All right.
And I want to just go one step further. I had the former attorney general with me, who was not my lawyer, who was acting as a friend. And we used his conference room. And so the FBI agent saw the former attorney general there. And I asked them, am I a suspect, blah, 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 do I need a lawyer? Oh, no. If they had in any sense intimated that I might have maybe be under some suspicion, I would have said, hey, Mr. Attorney General, will you come here, sit down with me, and you can act as my lawyer? So there was a setup right from the very beginning, and that's exactly what they did to Flynn. They show up at the White House. He thinks they show up for some very different purpose, and they're trying to just trick him. And that's how, you know, these are guys who are supposed to protect us. I mean, unless there's a wholesale investigation where let the sunshine in on everything, sunshine's the best disinfectant, I don't know that I or a lot of other people can ever trust the FBI again.
We've got about 2 minutes left, and I think we can all kind of imagine the personal toll that this must have taken on you, that it must have taken on General Flynn. But instead of us imagining, why don't you take about 2 minutes and tell us the personal toll that it took on you?
They interviewed me for, I don't know, maybe 20 or so hours in three different sessions, again, implying that I don't need a lawyer. And then once they changed my status, I immediately got a lawyer, and I got the best lawyer in the country, who got in touch with the Mueller people, who said, oh, no, you know, she's in real trouble, at which point we went into overdrive, demanded, we only were able to get files that they chose to share with us, and they cherry-picked what they shared. And, you know, it's a terrifying thing, because first of all, you think these guys are on the same side you're on. No, they're not. Their goal was to get the president of the United States, and I was collateral damage. They didn't care about me. They probably didn't really care about General Flynn. They wanted Trump and any route that they could get to Trump. It got so bad that during one of the investigations when I'm sitting with the Mueller people, they have 5 inches of files of what I did every single second of every single day during certain periods of time. And I'm just based on my memory. And they said, well, we have a period of time here of 90 minutes where you didn't text, you didn't email, you didn't talk to anybody on the phone, you didn't have any meetings. Is this when you were with Trump? Is this when Trump told you to tell Flynn to cut a deal with the Russians? And I looked at it and thought, God, 90 minutes, what could I possibly have been doing other than, it doesn't even take that long to do my hair. And so I said, oh, well, this is at lunchtime. That's when my husband and I took a long walk along the beach. I didn't take my cell phone with me. They didn't want to believe that. I mean, they were, you know, they were in the Stalin era in Russia, Stalin's head of his secret police said, show me the man, I'll find you the crime. And that's what was happening here. But in addition to all of this, what they want is that at the end, if they couldn't catch on anything, and for me, I wouldn't plead guilty to a crime I didn't think I committed. And there was a point at which I was so beaten down by days and days and subpoenas and hours, I finally turned to my lawyer and said, what is it they want? I can't give them anything else. There's nothing left to remember. And my lawyer said, well, they have a certain narrative of events, and you're not reinforcing that. Mm. And so then I thought, well, I'll just tell them whatever they want. Just make this go away. At which point my husband, who was with me, intervened and said, no, you can't do that. You'll never live with yourself again. And I said, well, honey, this is going to wipe out our lifetime savings, our retirement. We're going to have to probably sell the house to pay the lawyers. And I'll have to fight this for the rest of my life. My career is over, but our life will be over. And he said, no, no, you just got to do what you got to do. So in the end, I wouldn't plead guilty to a crime I didn't commit. I wouldn't implicate others in crimes that I did not believe they committed. And so then, in an interesting way, the FBI guys, having tried to press me to accuse Flynn and accuse Trump, they then, I think it must have dawned on them that they had a false guilty plea from Flynn, because then they started changing their attack in the next couple of meetings, the round of questioning. And the questioning became much more of, well, could you say that Flynn may have said this? Mm. So they were worried all of a sudden that they had gotten an illegal, a false confession. That's my sense of what happened.
Casey,
at the end of it all, Rick, we left the country.
Wow. Well, you're back, and it's great to
I'm
have
back
you back.
Now.
And you go into much more detail in your book, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, thanks so much for sharing such a personal experience with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for the Saturday Morning Update. Garden Sense follows the news next on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station.